You're listening to a Mash Those Buttons podcast, brought to you ad-free with the support of our patrons. Visit mashthosebuttons.com or stay tuned after the show for more details.
Hello and welcome to The Torn and the Goblin, the Mash Those Buttons podcast about Warcraft story and lore. My name is Nick Zelenkevich, and I'm Gragthar, Torn Hunter on Skywall US.
And I'm Katie, Clanker Goblin Resto Shaman on Earthen Ring US.
And today is August 19th, 2020, and this is episode number 102.
Woo!
And we have a guest here today, and before I get to the guest, I do want to apologize. As of this recording, episode 101 has still not been released. It was a great episode. It hurts me because it was such a great episode, and we had so much fun recording it, and I hope it sees the light of day soon. I hope by the time this episode is in your hands, you're wondering why I'm talking about this, because the other episode is already in your hands, so I apologize for the delay on that. Should be there, should be out very shortly. That said, maybe we'll never release it. It'll just be the missing episode 101.
It was such a good episode.
But we can just redo the episode like some other time. It'll be like episode like 145 or something, and then nobody will know that it's actually episode 101. But that said, let's get to our guest, because from the new show Warcraft Reloaded, I think episode 4 just dropped this week. We have Ryan, aka Cognitive Pit. Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me. And I can almost guarantee episode 102 will blow episode 101 out of the water. So yeah, everyone can just forget about episode 101.
I don't know. You haven't listened to it. There was some almost some like spoken word poetry in there that I can't think of a better way to describe you that.
This will
be a great episode. I have no doubt, but
yes,
there is something special in that 101 episode that I really, really want everybody to hear.
I don't know. He's going to surprise us by like beatboxing WoW lore. We're just going to be completely wowed here. So that's what I'm expecting.
Funny you mentioned beatboxing. Yeah. That's Max from Warcraft Reloaded. He does the beatboxing.
Yeah, Max or Steel Wolf on Warcraft Reloaded is a legitimate beatboxer. It shocked all of us when he popped out. Our intro is him beatboxing. It's beyond impressive to me, at least, someone who cannot beatbox.
I can't remember if it was Jarrett or Bob who told me, he's like one of the guys beatboxes, and he did the intro, and I'm like, yeah, I'm sure that's awesome. And then I listened to it, I was like, oh, that actually was really good. Like, he really did that one.
Yeah, like he beatboxes. I believe he produces music and he beatboxes.
Yeah. No, as I said, we had him on WoW Talk this week, and he was great to have on. He's got a good energy.
Yeah, I don't have the same chaotic energy that Max has, but I'll try to bring something special to him.
Well, no. Well, what you bring is a knowledge of the lore, because when I did talk to Bob, he's like Cognitive Pit. He knows the lore, so you can't let Bob down. He's in the chat now. You gotta hold up Bob's expectations here.
I'll do my best for you, Bob.
but it worked out very well, because you guys are a classic podcast, and we've had people on to talk about classic before, and it's always been a bit of a struggle to do the episodes right, because we try to be a story and lore podcast, but sometimes and I know we ramble anyway, and so we don't always stick to talking about the lore, but we try to get in like mechanics and stuff like that. That said, we'll go wherever the topic takes us, but in this case it works out very well, because in classic you just had the Gates of Ankaraj open up, and we were planning on talking about C'Thun tonight anyway. Like, our schedule just worked out. Tonight was going to be C'Thun night. And I was like, well, this is perfect. This is, it's an alignment of the stars.
That works out. So, I did try to cheat and go back. Like I said that I listened to your Old Gods podcast. I listened to the N'Zoth one. I was trying to get some insider info on what you knew about C'Thun already, so I could one up everything, be prepared for you. But I guess I'm on that podcast. I'll have to listen to it back and figure it out.
All you needed to do to prepare was just, show up. And did you at least get your Scarab Lord title, or did you miss out on that for some reason?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I did not have the 30 people and 18 hours a day to get my Scarab Lord. I actually have a lot of regrets over it, because we're on White Main, which is like the largest server. There are some other servers that are equal sized, and every server our sized pretty much was able to complete the war effort within, right away, like day one. They were able to complete the actual war effort. So the Gates of AQ actually opened about a week later from then. But we are under the impression that it would open pretty much right away after the war started. But there's actually a 5-day wait period after you turn in everything. So I had more time because of that than I realized. But then White Mane also just didn't finish the war effort for like 2 weeks. So I actually had a good amount of time to try it, but I wouldn't have known that till after. And it's tough. I was talking to someone who actually did the Scarab Lord. They moved into a gamer house with their friends, and for about a week and a half, they just grinded it out. They had to because they had a smaller group. They only had a few people, where normally you'd have like the support of your entire guild. But it's quite the grind, and nobody in our guild actually even attempted to complete it.
Oh, that's a shame. I heard there was like you had like a 10-hour window to like turn in a quest, and I guess after you kill C'Thun or something. I'm not quite too clear on the exact specifics of the event.
Yeah, but, I can do a quick breakdown. It's pretty easy. So basically, I'll give a quick lore rundown too. We can get into the details a bit more later, but 1,000 years prior to this, we actually erected the Scarab Wall. So the reason that AQ were unable to enter it is actually because of us. It's the good guys. So some dragons and night elves together, they worked together to create this wall to contain C'Thun. Because previously they thought that there was just some evil bugs attacking everybody, but the dragons found C'Thun and they were like, we better do something. So we erect the Scarab Wall to keep everything in. There's a magical barrier, which is why, you see flying Karaji. You would think they'd be able to fly over the wall, but there is a magical barrier. The only thing that can open it is a scepter made by Anachronos, who is the son of Nozdormu. And it is a scepter that you ring the gong and it reopens. And the whole point was that Fandral, Staghelm, had the scepter. And whenever they decided that they could go in and vanquish C'Thun, it was to be rung again, basically, and work together again. But Fandral broke the scepter on purpose. He swore off the dragons, snapped it into basically three pieces. And the whole point of the long, very, very long chain is to rebuild the scepter, get the three shards from three different factions of dragons, the green, the blue, and the red, and then bring the gong and go back in. So it's pretty simple when you put it in that terms, but the amount of time it takes and the effort, it's nearly impossible to get. There's a PvP aspect where there's world drops that you need, and if you're on a PvP server, it's not good. It's not a good situation unless you have a ton of people working with you.
So what do you have to do for each of the pieces of the scepter? I think that's sort of like the interesting piece here, because I mean, as far as like the overall quest design, it seems like it's fairly well laid out, like get these three pieces, bring them together. And they're all, I mean, as you said, like this is all was actually, it's like 975 years before the opening of the Dark Portal. So it's roughly 1,000 years before WoW then. So, I mean, they did a good job of like establishing all this stuff in history. And then, you know, Fandral, he's all upset because his son Valstan dies during the War of the Shifting Sands, which is the, when the Karaji come out the first time, because the Night Elves, Valstan, it's Valstan who wasn't paying attention and stumbles into Ankaraj on his own. But,
well,
yeah, exactly.
Well, what happens, so Valstan, it's actually pretty interesting. And I don't know if it goes... I don't know if this is anywhere except the short story, and there's a quest called The Calling in Silithus Now in Classic, where I'm not sure if it goes into the full detail, but what actually happened was they were winning against the Karaji and the Twin Emperors, who are sort of the rulers of the Karaji, if you don't count C'Thun. They told him, well, they knew that Valstan was a weak point for Fandral, and they actually attack some other town. I actually don't even know where, but they attack a different town and pull Valstan over there, and they ambush him there, and then they kill Valstan in front of Fandral on purpose. So it is like a well-executed plan, which I think is pretty interesting. Like it's very easy to forget as you're murdering bugs that the bugs are actually very intelligent bugs. And that they have plans and that they're conniving. The first boss in AQ40 is Prophet Scarum, who writes like prophecies of C'Thun, and he's a prophet. He's an actual prophet. So it is pretty interesting to see them kind of unfold that whole thing. So, I don't give Valstan too much of a hard time. He was just, trying to win a war and got cut in half by Rajax, I think.
Well, no, but even before that, like, because I guess Fandral wanted to, you know, Fandral knew about Silithus just being like a desert. He's like, we can regrow Silithus. And so he sends Valstan down there with some druids. And that's when he finds Ankaraj. And nobody, I guess the official line is that like they knew about Ankaraj like in the time of Azara. But then like since then, that knowledge was just kind of like lost. It was just, you know, like general background, you know, like maybe mythology. And so Valstan shows up and he's like, I don't know what this place is here. Let me check this out. And he goes in there. And of course, by going in there, that's what triggers C'Thun and the Karaji to be like, hey, we got an intruder. Let's, you know, kick this guy out. And then they're like, well, let's go and just start taking over the world again.
Yeah. And that is a little bit weird. It is weird how they sort of just wake up. Like that is how they function. They were dormant for like so long. The time between when they took over Ankaraj, the Silithid, and between when C'Thun sort of wakes them up and puts them into a frenzy is such a long period of time that it's kind of weird that they just needed to be woken up by just venturing to AQ. But the same thing sort of happens, I guess. They start waking up again, and that's why we decide to go back and put that scepter together and get back in there.
Well, the reason they wake up the second time is Cho'Gall. I don't know if this was in the comic or where this information is presented, but supposedly Cho'Gall went down and started assembling the Cult of the Damned down in Silithus, and then he had them do a ritual down there. Because since they couldn't pierce the Scarab Wall, like you said, it even though the physical wall, you know, it was only so high, you know, it was still a barrier that went up in the sky they couldn't fly over. And more importantly, it was a barrier that went under into the ground. They couldn't tunnel under it. And so he did this ritual with the cultists to break the barrier and free C'Thun. And when he did that, all the cultists die. And then Cho'Gall is just like, okay, my work here is done. And he leaves. So I don't think he actually plays any part in the original Gates of Ankaraj event, but he's the reason why it all happens.
Yeah, so the cults are all there, but I don't think in actual classic WoW there's like any mention of Cho'Gall having a play in it. But it's definitely, you know, the Silithus is full of the Cult of the Damned, and you deal with them as you sort of uncover what's happening. So the way that the quest line unfolds in Silithus is you're there with the Cenarian Circle, you do some quests trying to figure out what the heck the cult is doing there, and then you understand. That's where you actually stumble upon Prophet Scarum's prophecy of C'Thun, because we realize that something else is at play here. And then that is when we kind of rally together. And it's pretty cool. It happens a lot now in the game, it seems like. But AQ is the first like huge World of Warcraft time where the factions are working together. And I think it does happen quite a few times after that. But it was pretty big back in the day, and it feels pretty big now. We have PvP servers on Classic WoW are pretty vicious, so it's pretty cool to then have to work together. It kind of feels like how it would feel in game.
You know, I wonder, you talk about Prophet Scarum and having prophecies, and it's weird to look upon that knowing that like, oh, he's actually like C'Thun's in Ankaraj with him. Like, couldn't they just like meet? Like, I guess like, but that's how like old gods work, is like C'Thun. But I guess C'Thun could have like summoned him to his chamber or something. Or was he still trapped? I don't know. It's just weird, because normally when you think of prophecies and stuff, like you think of there being some sort of separation between the god and the prophet, like the prophet can't comprehend the god. But C'Thun, not only could you comprehend him, we go and spank him. Like he had a very physical presence that you normally don't associate with prophets. And so it's a weird, I don't know, I guess just because we can see the whole shape of the event, it's sort of weird to think about that as opposed to just, you know, I guess it's more like thinking of like the Church of the Light and Stormwind. Like, we still don't know everything about the light as far as how that communicates. They feel more religious, and like there's more of a spiritual connection than like, oh no, like C'Thun, he lives in the basement, we can go down and like, you know, hang out with him.
Well, I was gonna say, I like the other thing is too that like, you know, like even though they're old god servants, that doesn't mean, well, at least I'm not sure that they're like specifically like old god flesh insofar as like the Shah are, right? Like, so when they're like prophesying, I also think some of the old gods like go dormant in periods of time. I don't know. I don't know what he's doing down there. He has a bunch of, yeah, he's the one with a bunch of eyeballs. I had to think about it for a second. I had to remember. But like, it might also be one of those things where he's not just like, hey, it's just like gonna use my old god telepathy, be like, hey man, here's the next prophecy, like, just wanted you to know. Like, I don't know, I would guess that even some of their servants, like, revere them to the point where it's like, we don't want to bother you, giant C'Thun in the basement, so here's what I think is going to happen, or I don't know, something to that effect.
Yeah, I think even more than that, too, there, I think there's actually, there's a big disconnect, because there's sort of three factions, right? There's the Silithid, the Karaji, and then C'Thun. So I think that it's hard to say, but I think the Karaji, or Prophet Scarum, is a prophet to, like, the lower Karaji, or also the Silithid, and then Prophet Scarum may be able to go talk to C'Thun if he wants, but I feel like there is sort of still that disconnect. One of the big things that I thought was kind of interesting is that in as I was reading up more, I learned that, like, the twin emperors, who are supposed to be sort of the leaders of the Karaji and the Silithid, they learn stuff that they don't know about C'Thun along the way as well, too. So one of the big things is that in the War of the Shifting Sands, three dragons sacrifice themselves in order to push back the Karaji so they can build the wall. And that's, like, the Children of Ysera and Alexstrasza and Malygos.
I'm going to say Malygos.
Yeah, probably Malygos. And then, so everyone thinks they're dead, including the twin emperors. But it's revealed later that the reason a lot of the Anubisath warriors are so powerful in Ankaraj is actually because C'Thun kept those dragons and were basically torturing them and siphoning their power to his minions. And that's not something the twin emperors were aware of, even for Anubisath, that they created themselves, which was pretty interesting to read. So I think that there is some sort of disconnect. I think that C'Thun is mainly dormant prior to us opening the gates as well, too. So I don't think he's there sort of making a ton of plans necessarily. And then you brought up the flesh thing. It's hard to say, especially when you look at just classic WoW lore. This is where things get very confusing, because if you look at just classic WoW lore, the Silithid are created, like, seemingly from any, like any other creature. They're made from, like, the Well of Eternity's magic, just, like, made some Silithid. And then C'Thun kind of turned them into Karaji. Not all of them, but some of them got turned into Karaji over time. So it's kind of like, I don't know, like, is that even the canon in retail? I think it's a little bit different, because, like, all the bug species originate from some primal origin bug species. And I don't think it's quite like that in classic yet, but I don't think it's, like, that crazy of a stretch between the two.
Well, there's the Akir.
Right.
The Akir were, like, one of the original species that popped off of the old gods when they first got thrown down. And then, in particular, there's the Troll Akir War that happens when the trolls find the the one Kithraxi, I mean Kithix, who was, like, after he fought Tyr and then he was wounded, and so he went to rest up at the base of, like, Mount Zaldazar. And so the trolls have this area that they don't go to because it's got this, like, dark energy. And then finally one of them goes there and they're like, oh, hey, what's this fleshy thing? And they kick it. And then they wake up, basically, you know, they wake up in old the Kithraxi, and and then now that's a problem. So then the Kithraxi rallies all the Akir, and they get into a fight with the various trolls. And so the trolls, at first, they're kind of losing, and then they learn, like, guerrilla tactics, and then manage to push the Akir back to different parts of the world. And of course, the parts they push the back, like the Gurabashi, are fighting them over in southern eastern kingdoms. The Zol, was it the Zolfarak? I guess those are the ones over in Tanaris. They want, actually, I think it's the Gurabashi too. They actually push in Tanaris. They push them up into, they push some of the Akir into Silithus, and then that's when the Akir find Ankaraj. And so they wind up getting, you know, hiding out in there. And C'Thun is like, oh, hey, I got all these bug people around me. And he starts morphing them. And that's when they become the Karaji. So they become slightly different than the standard Akir that were there before. Now, Ankaraj was built, that's the prison that was built for C'Thun by High Keeper Ra way back in the day after the Black Empire, when the Titanforged all took them out. So Ra rolls through, builds Ankaraj, C'Thun is stuck there. And then they also put in the Forge of Origination right over in Uldum around the same time, since that's right over there. Like, Ra's taking care of all this. And then they leave. Then later the Akir show up after getting their butts kicked by the trolls. they get morphed into Karaji, and then Valstan shows up, wakes them up, because this whole the whole theme here is that the old gods are just like sleeping. Everybody's just sleeping, and then like somebody just stumbles in and like, oh hey, what's this? And then they wake them up, and the old gods are like, oh, we got woken up. Now we have to take over the world.
Like, yeah, it's kind of interesting going in there. It's interesting going in there too, because back in the day, going into AQ, you see the Anubis South Warriors, you see all the golem, like the obsidian golems, and you just think like, okay, there's some Egyptian mobs in Silithus that, you know, it is what it is, that just is what it is. But it's kind of interesting that they are like Titan forged creations that are enslaved by C'Thun and the Karaji and kind of forced to do what they're doing. Like, they didn't actually make them. They made some of them, I think. But it's kind of interesting that they took over this prison, and it kind of made it. He just made it his home. Like, he took his prison and was like, "This is my home now, and I have an army. This is easy."
Yeah, yeah. It's It just feels like we, as a society on Azeroth, did a bad job managing this threat.
I mean, we've done a bad job managing a lot of threats, to be fair. But we just like kind of negligently, straight up forgot about this one. So.
Well, this one's also the easiest to defeat, though. That's the good side, right? There's like almost the preparation is like normal war preparation. For some of the other old gods, it's like, well, we have to do some sort of special crazy fight, or even some of the other later bosses. You know, we have to get some artifact that Thrall's going to use to, you know, harness the power of the universe in order to defeat a boss. We just go beat up C'Thun. We're just like, hey, how's it going? We swing our swords at him and then he dies. So not quite as special or crazy, but you know, we do put them down pretty well.
Well, that's interesting though that you mentioned that, because canonically Nazoth is supposed to be the weakest old god, and so right. You would think like, oh well, you know, like he should be the easiest fight then, but he's the one where you got to get the dagger and pierce the carapace and all this crazy stuff. You know, he's the one who's the final boss of an expansion. You know, Yogg, who's supposed to be all manipulative and everything, he just gets a patch. And even then, like, you know, for his fight, he still, you know, Yogg did a good job of like building up a fortress around him. Oh, okay, what do you want to say,
Katie? That
fight
is hard, though. I want to point that out. That fight is hard, especially if you're trying to solo it when you shouldn't be trying to solo it. Like, I think I tried to solo it in like Kata or something, and I kept getting mind controlled. That fight can be hard. But sorry,
C'Thun's hard too. C'Thun for classic WoW, C'Thun is a pretty difficult fight. Well, I don't mean for classic WoW. I guess I mean for vanilla WoW. C'Thun is a difficult fight, where most fights in vanilla WoW were mainly just tank and spanks up to here, and then you're met with Twin Emperors and C'Thun. And there's not just mechanics. There's like a lot of mechanics. C'Thun has multiple, well, he has two phases really, but there's sort of a third special phase where you get sucked into his stomach. So there's like a lot to do, which is unlike anything else. You know, we killed Nefarian. I mean, that didn't take anything special at all either. That was really easy. So C'Thun does take a little bit extra. And I've thought a lot about why we are able to kill C'Thun without any sort of special abilities. And there's a mechanic, and the only way to actually damage C'Thun in the actual mechanical fight is he'll eat you. You'll go into his stomach and you kill tentacles inside of his stomach, which then make him vulnerable to damage. So maybe it's a hubris thing. He ate us, you know, sent us to his only vulnerable spot just out of, you know, he just does it. I don't know why he does it, but he does it. And then that's the only way to defeat him. If he never does that, we can't damage C'Thun and he would just kill us all. So maybe that...
Now you've got me thinking of Drax from Guardians of the Galaxy 2 when he jumps in the beast and he's like, oh, the hide is thinner from the inside, and he's stabbing him. And
that's exactly what we do.
I mean, also, to be fair, I believe this is one of the few 40-man raids, isn't it? Like, if you think about the modern old gods that we've fought, like, I think C'Thun is the only one that takes 40-man team to bring him down. So it's not really anything to sneeze at. Like, we always are kind of like, oh, haha, like, I can go in there and kick his butt now. But considering that you have to coordinate 40 people to kill that thing, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
I don't even know how people did it the first time around.
Yeah, and in canon, it is like a real war effort. I mean, it is not just having fun. And AQ 20, which is really also almost more interesting than AQ40 in a lot of ways, because you have some of the characters who appear, you know, you have Rajax in there. You have Osirian as the final boss, who is like a really cool Anubisath who gained extra powers, and he looks really awesome. He's got the, like, one of the coolest models, and he gained that power. Yeah, he is a he's not just a unique model. I was looking, and apparently he's a unique species. Yeah, I forget what the name was, but he just became his own species after C'Thun gave him some extra powers. So good for him. But the Rajax fight is sort of the important one, because you're fighting in game. You fight wave after wave of captains and just armies. So that's sort of the time where we're fighting the actual army that the War of the Shifting Sands was sort of about. And Rajax was in charge of the War of the Shifting Sands, but all that gets sent to AQ20, which is a little, you know, odd. And then there's just some sort of random bosses in AQ40 till you get to the really important people. But that makes AQ20 a lot of fun. And I think in canon, I think the Horde go to AQ20 and the Alliance go to AQ40. And it's, you know, we go with 40, but in actuality, I think it's like thousands and thousands of people running in and raiding the city.
So as far, I guess one question I have about the war effort is, what is the lore reason for all of the cloth?
So all of the cloth are bandages. So the reason you need cloth is for bandages for soldiers. So you actually don't even turn in cloth. You turn the bandages in for the war effort.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay.
So everyone needed the cloth, but in reality, everyone was just making the bandages themselves and then turning them in. What I'm trying to figure out is the need for strangle kelp. We needed about, I think we needed 30,000 strangle kelp. I don't know that. I'm not 100 on that one either, but
it could be rations. You dry that out and then
eat that? I don't know why we would choose to bring linen bandages when we could bring all rune cloth bandages as well, too. So there are some things. I assume there's maybe some, you know, there's some low level people who are coming to help with the war effort, I guess.
That is a very good point.
It allows everyone to participate, I suppose. It may be easier to get linen than rune cloth, at least.
I mean, it was pretty fun doing it. I'm retrospectively, I'm glad I was on a server that took a long time, because we all had to go out and do our part. I was out there getting leather to, you know, I don't even know, to make beds and blankets for our soldiers down in Silithus.
That's basically Azeroth was uniting to make sure that, like, the first responders had PPE.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is actually, it's cool. Like, part of me wants them to do something like that in current WoW, because I think that would be neat, but then also I could just hear people raging that they actually have to collect resources and then give them up. So,
yeah, it was a lot of fun. It really, like, it's one of the few things in World of Warcraft, I think, that puts you way more into the actual story of what's going on, because you do have to go get the linen. Like, and when we were out on the auction house, you couldn't just go buy it on the auction house. You had to go skin, you had to go farm for linen, you had to go herb for that material, and you weren't getting gold out of it. You were just helping the war effort. Unless you sold it all, which a lot of people did. In which case, you're still helping the war effort, but profiting at the same time, which is fine, you know?
It must have sucked to try to level tailoring at the time.
I actually leveled tailoring at the time on, I was helping my brother level. He just started a dwarf priest, and I was helping him level tailoring, and rune cloth went from like a gold tennis stack to one. There was not enough rune cloth to buy and do the tailoring. So when it did come up, it was, some of it was a gold per piece of cloth, so 20 gold a stack. Some of it was 10 gold a stack. This doesn't sound like a lot to retail, I'm sure.
Oh,
but
it's a lot.
It's a lot. For a stack of rune cloth, you know, 5 to 10 gold is pretty absurd. So that was kind of a nightmare. But for low-level people leveling, they got all their gold in. I know some people were leveling alts and just skinning, and they were making, you know, them enough money for their mount by the time they were level 15.
It's always like a sticker price shock, like to hear about, to remember the old economy, as it were.
Our economy, we don't have to get into economy too much, but the economy in Classic WoW is pretty absurd, because most people are doing raw gold farms. So, you know, there's just too much gold in the economy to begin with. So it's very, like, unlike the vanilla experience in that aspect, I find. But it's still really good. I'm still super happy to be running into AQ.
So I'm trying to think what parts of the lore we've hit, because we got through the since we've been jumping around a bit here, we got through the Trollocir War that leads to the building of Ankaraj, that leads to Valstan finding Ankaraj, that leads to Fandral coming down, leading the effort. They battle around. The effort gets to the Caverns of Time. That's when the dragons get involved. They build the wall. The three dragons get stuck behind the wall, and everything's good until Cho'Gall shows up. I think the only thing we didn't mention was that Bolvar and Thrall decide that there needs to be a united commander, and that's when Varrok Sorfang gets tapped to lead the war effort.
Yeah, which was cool. So I wasn't that involved in lore when this all took place. So it's cool to see, you know, Sourfang, I think, is a pretty big figure now in Warcraft. So it's like, oh, Sourfang, of course. But it's cool to come back and say, oh, wow, like, he's right here. He's been here this whole time. And I actually didn't know he was the commander back when we did it the first time. Fandral, like, you can see, especially if you read the short story. So that is somebody who later turns against us, right? I believe he starts like the Druid of the Flame, that sort of thing. I played a little bit in that. I think it's a Cataclysm. He pledges allegiance to Ragnaros or something like that. But if you actually read the short story, you can see, you know, I wasn't actually sure when I read the short story. It was written in 2005, because you can see him not turning evil in it, but he says some weird stuff in it that makes you think he would turn evil. So he says something like, he smashes the scepter and he's like, you know, I don't want to have anything to do with dragons. And then he says, like, I will have my son back, even if it takes a millennia. I will have him back. And I'm like, that is evil. That's what evil people say.
But that's a little on the nose, though, because even if it takes a millennia, it's like, gee, it's 1,000 years later. Like, what have you done to get your son back? Like,
he really, and that's where the lore kind of gets kind of confusing, too, because Fandral, in Classic WoW, is the faction leader for the Night Elves, I believe. But I don't think he actually shows up to AQ. Like, I don't think he has any, there's no follow up to his story with AQ too much, I think.
Well, I think he was done with the whole, his whole arc is basically that he watches his son get ripped to shreds in front of him. And then he's just a broken night elf for the rest of his days.
Ever.
Yeah. Poor guy.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that's not a good reason to be broken, but, at the time, technically he was responsible for poisoning Teldrassil with the infected grain, that you bring him some of the grain or whatever. And I think it's unresolved at the time. And I'm not sure when it actually gets, you actually find out about that, but yeah, like Malfurion comes back cause he's sleeping. Malfurion comes back in the Cataclysm. And then Fandral shows up shortly thereafter working for Ragnaros, which again, that doesn't entirely make sense because, like, Ragnaros, well, I guess at that point, Ragnaros has no allegiance to the old gods. Like, back in the day, because the old gods and the elementals, they fought, and then the old gods worked for the elementals, or the elementals worked for the old gods. And at that point, they're all separate. So it's like, even though Ragnaros worked with the old gods back in the day, he's not with them anymore. So I guess it makes sense that Fandral, being like a free agent at that point, would you know, he'd be susceptible to latching on. To his credit, at least, he picked a guy that made him look super awesome. I mean, the Fire Kitty skin.
It's
a
cool.
Very nice appearance.
That's so true. Fire druids are pretty cool, but I don't. Yeah, did they ever explain why in detail he went over to Ragnaros? Like, what did Ragnaros promise him? Did it have anything to do with his son, or is just more
so,
power?
Yeah, it did have to do with his son. So this is something I had to look up. I wanted to get a little bit more retail knowledge, and in my research, I found that I believe that somebody was giving him like visions of his son and twisting, like, his mind that way.
Right, because of the nightmare.
Yeah,
I think that's part of the nightmare.
Yeah, it was. It was like Xavius or something. The Emerald Nightmare guy was twisting him, and he saw his son with his eyes and stuff. Which, you know, at the end of the day, they kind of do that with a lot of different things. Like, anytime old gods, like, oh, old gods corrupted him, it's like, well, he's not his fault. Like, you know, Neltharion was a really good guy, but now he's Deathwing. Not his fault though.
I was gonna say, I think that was in the Stormrage book, actually. I think they mentioned it in there. Something. Wow, it's been a long time since I've done Cataclysm lore. Clearly need to go back and have a refresher.
It seems that there's like two kinds of like old god. Like, one is just the steady drumbeat of whispers in the back of your head. Like, given enough time, and they have enough time, like, they will drive you crazy in that regard. And then the other is like, oh yeah, we're gonna like you know, show you visions of a loved one that either you lost or a loved one that you, you know, that isn't, the, you know, like will corrupt the loved one and use that to get you kind of thing. And so, you know, it's sort of like they'll find your weakness. And if you don't have a weakness, they'll just annoy you to no end.
They'll annoy you until you have a weakness.
Exactly. They'll make one.
Yeah, you pretty much can't leave anybody alone on Azeroth, or they're going to hear some whispers and be evil next time they show up.
Azeroth needs to practice the buddy system.
How do you know that your buddy's really there?
Yeah, I mean,
that's how they get you, right?
I mean, at that point, like, what can you even say? Okay, he's seeing visions of his son. Like, there's really, how could he have won? There's there's nothing you can do, unfortunately. And then you look at like Silithid, they're not even like, yeah, they're affected over time, but he's also just like turning them into Karaji as well. Like, I don't even know what exactly that process looks like, but he has the ability to do it. He does it to Assyrian, turns him into that creature. So there is some physical way he's doing and imparting power on people other than just seeping out.
Well, it's interesting again to compare C'Thun to like Nazoth, because C'Thun takes the Akir, turns them into the Karaji. Nazoth takes the Night Elves and turns them into the Naga. And it's, you know, like we've seen like the Well of Eternity has the, I guess, evolutionary powers that, you know, you can take the trolls, you know, throw them in the Well of Eternity, you get Night Elves. And then now you take those same Night Elves, you expose them to Nazoth and they get Naga. And I mean, I know like there's the curse of the flesh and whatnot going around, but this isn't quite the same thing because these are all flesh along the same lines. I wonder if there's like a certain, you know, like motif, because I guess even then, like you could see like, What does C'Thun look like, you know, if you expose an ogre to him? And that's Cho'Gall. Like when you get the morphed Cho'Gall with the eyeballs and stuff. Yeah. And maybe we don't, I guess maybe because we only have a few examples of this, it's hard for us to see like a set pattern. Whereas like with the Well of Eternity, we've kind of got a better feel for like, okay, like this is how like the, like a Murloc, throw it in the Well of Eternity, you get a Jinyu. So, like, yeah, I guess it's sort of, you know, the energy that they're all exposed to in a way. And I just wonder, like, if the old gods have their own little stamp of that energy in there that you can see, like, okay, like, this is, you know,
do.
Like, an ogre on C'Thun versus an ogre on Nazoth would, like, look slightly different.
Think about Yogg-Saron, right? Like, the Kla'Xi getting cursed with the, like, the Sha'Goop, right? So, like, I kind of think of that as a case study against, like, you know, Cho'Gall, and I think that was C'Thun with all the eyeballs. Like, I can't think of any with Yogg-Saron that just had someone pop up a bunch of mouths everywhere, but I wouldn't be surprised if they all have their kind of unique thumbprint. I would say that Nazoth was tentacles, but there are tentacles everywhere when it's old gods, so that's not really probably a very good thumbprint. But I don't know. You're right, though. That would be really interesting to figure out if there's an actual, like, if you're, there's on the field of battle, right, and you have the old gods are all warring off, do all of their minions, like, if they both have Karaji, do they look different? Like, if they're facing off against each other, could you tell the difference? Do they just paint themselves different colors? I don't know.
There's probably, like, an old god, like, professor who, like, can study this and, like,
oh my
you
gosh.
Know, immersed in the culture could probably tell the differences. But from, like,
it's gotta our, be a crazy
like, 50,000-foot view where we really... You know, we're just sort of we're just biased against the old gods. We can't really tell the difference between them. They all look the same to us.
I mean, it's kind of funny how a lot of pretty much everything in Warcraft, when it gains power, just changes its form in some monstrous way too. Pretty much like any way that they do it, they turn into some sort of monster. Galakrond is at the first dragon. He's just like eating dragons and turning into some sort of like horrible monster dragon. It's just everyone is just always becoming a monstrous in Warcraft.
I mean, it's basically Dragon Ball Z. They just haven't reached their final form yet.
Which C'Thun should probably not be in, is not, shouldn't be in his final form. So it sounds like it's not clear in retail, it sounds like. But I believe in vanilla, like, he's not killed. Like, he should not be dead in vanilla. When I think we just send him back to a dormant state, to my knowledge, because, well, we've already all decided to stop killing old gods, right? I thought that was like a thing we all decided with like Yasharge. We were like, okay, well, we're going to stop killing these guys. Time to imprison them. So especially because we don't use any sort of special item, I would think that C'Thun should still be somewhere. But, you know,
like, I think that was one of the things that's still debated. Like, I know that I had mentioned this in the pre-show, but one of the things that comes up often when talking about old gods is Serenite. That's because it's the blood of Yogg-Saron, right? So it's actually an ore that we're mining and then we're putting on our bodies. And I'm like, that sounds like a good idea. And like, you can actually hear the whispers when you supposedly put on gear that's made out of Serenite. And Sylvanas impaled herself on a Serenite spike and had all these visions. So like, that's one of those things where it's like, I don't know that they actually die as much as, like you said, they kind of go dormant and then you try and imprison them while they're dormant. It's kind of like catching a Pokemon. You're like, you try and knock it out and then you just stuff it in something. You're like, okay, I'll never come out of here. We're just going to put you, bury you deep under the earth and hope that nobody sleeps too close to you.
Yeah, I mean, you have whispers. In Pandaria, is it Yogg-Saron? Who's the old god for Pandaria?
That's Yasharge.
Yasharge. Yeah, right. So there, he's destroyed his... It's just his heart, right? It's just like one piece of him and is enough to do insanity on the world. So you would think that C'Thun would be around, but like with any kind of, obviously there's tons of sort of retconning and changes in story, and whether or not you want to go fight C'Thun again, it plays a factor into the lore, I'm sure. Whether or not people even want to see C'Thun again, which I would assume are people over old gods in retail? I'm not really sure. What are people are interested in fighting in retail?
Yes and no. I think because we just fought N'Zoth, and so there's a little bit of, well, we just fought N'Zoth, so let's move on to something else. But on the other hand, it's like we didn't fight N'Zoth for that long, so it's not like we didn't have like a whole entire old god expansion. We had like half an old god expansion, and so there's a little bit like, you know, we wanted the full old god expansion. So I'd say if anything, it's the kind of thing where that Blizzard could have done more. They put, they kind of put the old gods on the shelf for a little bit. I'm sure they'll come back at some point, and hopefully they'll give us more when they bring them back. They did, you know, it's rare for them to actually manage to, when they have something, to not run it into the ground to the point where everybody's completely tired and like, okay, that's enough. Let's move on. We're done here. Like I'm thinking of like orcs at the end of Warlords of Draenor, or, even like fell stuff at the end of Legion, where you're just like, okay, let's move on. Because usually too, Blizzard does a good job of like introducing something leading into the next expansion. So you'll see hints of you'll have had it for like 3 years, roughly, kind of like floating around, with a heavy emphasis in the last part of that 3 year period. I don't think we quite got that with the old gods this time. So they're not quite as played out as they could be.
I mean, I think they're always in the back pocket because they're just such an excellent bad guy. I mean, like in the newest cinematic in retail, well, one of many cinematics, Rathian comes storming into the throne room and he's like, "Aha, well, the old god's already here, Anduin. They've already been manipulating."
And he gets
you.
Punched, right? Does Anduin punch him? Yes, that's a good one.
Still satisfying every time I watch it. But yeah, so like that's one of the best things about the old gods is that they're always manipulating, they're always scheming, and it's kind of hard to like kill them permanently, which makes them great bad guys because they're just like, "Aha, but I was actually never dead. Joke's on you." So I still want an old god expansion. I still want a whole old god expansion.
I was under the impression, and again, I played through Pandaria and I've played every expansion since, but I was under the impression that I thought we were getting closer to like a void expansion, but old gods are like minions, right? Like they're really not even the big bad when you're talking about the void, right? So they would have to do the old god expansion before we do anything crazier than that, I would assume.
Maybe.
You would think, but Blizzard's had a bit of a track record, I'd say going back to Argus, and I don't know if you want to argue anything even before that, where there's some stuff that's been teased in the lore that sounds like, okay, we'll get this in its own expansion. Like we'll get Argus in its own Argus expansion. We'll get the old gods in a full old god expansion. Mm. We'll get, you know, Azshara and Nazjatar in a full Azshara expansion. And instead it's a patch. And they're like, yeah, we just didn't have enough to flesh it out. And I think I've said this before, like they can flesh out as much as they want. And you know, they can build up what they need to justify an expansion or not. I mean, I'm not complaining that we're going to Shadowlands as opposed to like the Black Empire. Although, we were talking with Skull Shorties. We were talking with him on Twitter earlier. You and I were, Katie, about how BFA I don't want to say it would have been better, but it certainly would have been different if instead of Zul getting killed by Rastakhan in the one cinematic, like if Zul was actually like like a mid expansion boss, and you could have used him to sort of bridge from Uldir to like Zol to N'Zoth a little bit better. I mean, there's, you know, but that's, you know, and I mean, we, I guess we kind of do that like in our What If episodes, like, you know, like fantasy booking. It's easy to kind of sit there and look at what Blizzard has done when it's done and be like, yeah, you could have done this better. Yeah, you move this around here and you could have over, you know, you could have made the plot flow a little bit easier. And, you know, one, we don't, I mean, we assume they know what they're doing when they do something, that they always have the, you know, the full overview, that they know where they're trying to go with a story. But at the same time, we don't know all the reasons for all of their decisions and, you know, when certain decisions are made and when they're, you know, they're moving chess pieces around and stuff. So yeah, it's easy to sit there at the end of an expansion and look back and say, yeah, this could have been better. As opposed to not better, like not the expansion could have been better. Like I guess the story could have been better executed, perhaps. It's a little more difficult to imagine what they're actually thinking when they're, you know, in their little narrative meeting rooms going through that and working stuff out, as far as what are they considering that we're not thinking of when we just look back and say, yeah, you know, that second boss, that fight didn't quite work. But, you know, if you had changed it around a little bit, you know, it's just wishful thinking at that point.
Well, yeah, it's hard to fit a narrative into a game cycle, too, where like their mm-hmm. main focus has to be, well, like releasing expansions, releasing patches. When you look at AQ, like there's a lot, you know, it's cool. There's that short story. There's like one quest chain that gives you some of like most of the info that you'd get out of the short story. It ends up in the calling quest. If anybody wants to go do it in Classic WoW, it's pretty interesting and you get to read some really cool stuff. But other than that, though, there, you know, AQ is a pretty big launch. There's a huge war effort, but the actual in-game lore you get from it, you know, they released the short story because there's really nothing else in game to talk about what's going on. It's pretty difficult in game to figure out like what is AQ, who are these things. Like I said, you'd be like, oh, these Egyptian statues are here, I guess. Okay, but even though there is like one quest that says that yes, they are made by Titans, like it explains everything that AQ is, but it's a single quest that you have to get to.
It's like in a movie when there's the one character who has like the 5-minute exposition to just explain everything, and then it's like, okay, now we can move on.
Yeah, I mean,
it makes you wonder though, like going back, especially because I mean, Classic WoW isn't just sort of, you know, replaying of vanilla and a re-examining of what the game was at that point. It's sort of a re-examination of how Blizzard was handling the game at that point.
Right.
And, you know, I didn't realize that a lot of the lore for Encourage came from that one short story. And it makes me wonder, like, because we're so used to now. I mean, we were talking, I think last week, Katie and I, you know, we're trying to plan out our episodes for the rest of the year here. We know Shadowlands is coming. We're like, well, there's probably going to be some comics. There's probably going to be like, you know, like maybe they'll have like 3 or 4 animated shorts kind of harbingers. Or
there was a book, you know.
Yeah, we already got the book, you know. Like, so they've established a pattern of how they roll the lore out, especially in when they're rolling out an expansion that we know. And so it's like we're planning these episodes and we're like, okay, like we have this idea of where we're going to go with the show, and we know it's going to get shot all over the place because there's going to be stuff that we're gonna be like, oh, well, we can't talk about this character because this thing just happened and we have to talk about this comic now for like an hour. So, you know, like we know like Blizzard has a method to their madness, whereas back then there was no method, there was no madness. They were figuring stuff out themselves. So the fact I mean, obviously there was Warcraft lore before the game. I mean, because I think coming out of Warcraft 3 is when you had stuff like the War of the Ancients trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that came out before World of Warcraft did, and so we know it wasn't like new for them to be like, oh, hey, let's write some stuff and put that out. But I think was that the first time that they put something on the website? I don't know if any of this is going to be able to answer that question. I'm not, it's kind of a rhetorical question. I know you were doing homework for this, Ryan. I don't think you were.
Yeah.
You prepared that question.
I can whip out the date that it came out. I saw the archive of it, but I think there might've been some stuff on the site with lore before then. I think there were other short stories. At least there are short stories that like have to do with stuff before AQ, but when they were released, I mean, I have no idea. But the short story is like really cool because it puts you into it's from the perspective of Shiramar, who is a Night Elf priest who was there at the War of the Shifting Sands. And it's kind of funny how, you know, this priestess is the person who is canonically who rings the gong. But, you know, she talks about her experience making the scepter, and it's like the same thing that the players went through. And then it talks about everyone's views of the person, and it's like the same way you would look at Scarab Lord in game is like the Shira Mar character who's like, it's impressive. And even if you're on different races, you're still, you know, you're still just like, oh, like this person did so much to get this and to get to this point. But then you get to see the War of the Shifting Sands pretty gruesomely. And then it ends when, you know, they're going into AQ. So it's a really cool short story. But again, yeah, there's just not like, that's it. That's all. You have a short story and then you go kill C'Thun. So, I mean, honestly, I don't play that much retail, but personally, I would love to see C'Thun come back to get more of him, because you go into his stomach and you kill him. And then is really not enough, I think, personally.
Well, I think a lot of people suspected that there was going to be some big payoff once the sword got plunged through Silithus. And we know that it reawakened some of the Silithid, but I think that everyone's like, oh my gosh, we're going to have like C'Thun 2.0. And that didn't happen yet. So we'll see. Definitely, I think there's still space and room for it to come back. It'd be cool to have like a Shifting Sands 2.0 in retail, where it's like modern day take on the Shifting Sands would be kind of cool.
Yeah, and the style is really awesome in AQ. Just that's my personal opinion, the look and feel of AQ, and especially compared to the rest of Classic WoW.
I mean, and who doesn't love the bug mounts? I'm sorry, I'm a mountain specialist. Of like, how could you not love getting all those bug mounts? Why?
Yeah, because you can only use them in AQ.
What?
Can't you?
What? Except for you can do the archaeology and you can get the...
Yeah, the archaeology or Scarab Lord, or you're stuck in AQ.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yep. Luckily, sorry, go on.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I have to do like my one tiny mini flex since we're actually talking about this topic. I saw the Scarab Lord on my server Dalaran one time, and they were an Alliance player. And I freaked out because I knew what that mount was, and I chased them all around Ironforge.
Yeah.
But that was like... in rap,
maybe, so. Perhaps little known. So people thought for a long time, at least back in the day, that there could only be one Scarab Lord on a server, but that really isn't the case. And there's like tons of Scarab Lords now, because anyone who bangs the gong in that 10 hours of, so after you
Do
bang
they get the mount too,
they get the mount and the title. But nobody really knew it because the chance that everybody finished at the same time back in the day would be like impossible. But now everyone was able to finish it like at the same time, because the war effort took the longest, and everyone was able to do the quests pretty quickly. Well, I say everybody, but it cost people tens of thousands of gold and man hours unlike any other project. And I would have loved to have it, because Classic WoW is really about experiencing stuff you couldn't experience before. So things like Thunder Fury, things like Scarab Lord are very valuable in the Classic WoW experience.
Don't talk about Thunder Fury in front of us.
Our listeners are just going to stop listening right now.
Is there a problem with Thunder Fury? Yeah.
No. Go look through our library. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, you'll find it.
No, but I just imagine, though, like somebody, you know, at like the 9 hour and 59 minute mark, like somebody just casually walking up to the gong, like at this point, everybody's gone and moved on. And he's just like, you know, just imagining like, oh, if everybody was still here, and then he bangs it and he still gets the title. Like, what?
Yeah. I mean, it's you earned it, frankly. I mean, it would be, if only one person could get it, what a nightmare that would have been. it would have been true horror. And there's layering on Classic WoW for white main, so only a few servers have different layers, and without that, I don't even know what it would have looked like. No one would have become the Scarab Lord, and on some servers they were actually griefing each other so hard that some people couldn't become Scarab Lord. So that is what happens in some places.
I don't know, see, that's the thing, is like, again, thinking of like the way, like we were talking about the classic economy and stuff, like it almost feels like, yeah, like the Scarab Lord should be one person. Like, yes, that would be ruthless and that would be crazy and that would be kind of terrible in a lot of ways. But that's the kind of like hardcore cutthroat MMO experience I think a lot of people want out of their classic.
I think people like me. So there's like a bunch of different people who play classic, and not to self-promote too much, but that's why I like Warcraft Reloaded, the podcast I'm on with Blaze and Bob and Steel Wolf, because we all have a different background. So for me, I thought Scarab Lord was one person. There was only one on my server, and I thought it was one. So if they had come back and said we're only doing one to recreate that initial experience, I'm somebody who's cool with that. But people who were on private servers who know and have gotten Scarab Lord or have been through this experience, for that to be changed, that would be like, I'm sure the uproar would be huge. But for like normal people who are trying to, I don't want to say normal people, but maybe less hardcore people, people who weren't playing vanilla over this huge span of time waiting for Classic to come out, recreating those sort of experiences, I don't have a problem with personally, because that's how it really kind of was, you know, back in 2005 for real.
So that is cool. I'm glad that they brought back the Encourage event. Even though you missed out on part of it, I'm still glad you got to still participate in some of part of it. It's more than I did. I'm still hanging out in the Barrens killing harpies.
Yep.
Like one every 6 weeks.
Well, I love Classic WoW, and I feel bad. I feel bad that that's your experience with Classic WoW. You got to come out raiding, you know, get to max level. That's the best part of Classic WoW, is there's not much to do other than raid. So you get to go and kill C'Thun. We can talk about C'Thun, and I'll see C'Thun next week.
I'm reliving Classic WoW just like I did vanilla, where I got to the Barrens and then I was like, I got to live my life. I can't be in the Barrens. So the only difference is I didn't unsub.
For shame. I spent my Classic WoW or my vanilla WoW experience killing raptors and skinning them for hours at 2 a.m, hoping my mom didn't hear me doing it downstairs.
All right. Well, I think that covers everything about C'Thun that I wanted to cover here. So we still have to finish our Old God series. We still have to talk about Yogg and Nazoth. Oh no, we did Nazoth. So Yogg and I guess Yashard. So we'll get to them at some point. But Shadowlands is coming up very soon too. So we're going to start talking about Yeah, I know.
Don't remind me. Yeah. I'm not ready.
I know. Well, here's what I realized today that actually made me a little bit excited, is that it has to come out by the end of the year, barring like some kind of disappointing announcement from Blizzard. And there's only like 4 months and 11 days left in the year.
I think so. I was talking to one of my friends, Cavo, and he said that like they have stuff on the PTR already for it.
Oh, so, yeah.
Which I didn't know until yesterday. And I was like, oh, no. Oh, Lord, I'm not ready. Please stop.
So hopefully we'll be getting stuff sooner than when we may be thinking. So, yeah, so we might have to push Yogg and Yashraj back into Suramar territory for now. Sorry, Kurabara.
Sorry.
But that said, thank you, Ryan, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a blast to just talk about Warcraft lore, so I'm very happy to do that. Not talking about raiding mechanics or anything else. I much prefer talking about the lore. I'm gonna have to sneak in some more on Warcraft Reloaded.
Oh yeah, anytime you want to come on, you're welcome to here. Mm-hmm. So thank you again for coming on. Thank you to Jarrett for producing and editing. Thank you, Kurabara, for editing. Thank you, everybody in the chat room. We had a ton of people in the chat room.
I know.
I don't know where you all came from, but thank you. So thank you all for coming and hanging out there. Thank you everybody at home for downloading and listening. We are at Torin Goblin on Twitter, also at the Mash Network. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/mashthosebuttons, YouTube at youtube.com/mashthosebuttons. Katie, where can people find you?
You can find me as always at HyruleMaster77 on Twitter.
Ryan, where can people find you?
You can find me at Cognitive Pit on Twitter. I don't post a lot, but you can see some cool art of my character killing Nefarian. So there's one post worth coming to see. So come follow me on Twitter.
And where can people find Warcraft Reloaded?
Yeah, you can find Warcraft Reloaded at WC Reloaded on Twitter. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify. Those are the ones I know for sure you can find us on, so find us there, and I won't misspeak, so Blazing Bob doesn't chew me out later. Find us on those, too.
Yeah, I did listen to your first episode, and I snuck that into my podcast backlog, and I thought it was a great show. You guys really, it was impressive because you guys got into some of the weeds on some of like the gear and stuff in Classic that I wouldn't even think would be worth getting into, but you guys like we're talking about that stuff.
Yeah, so if you're a warrior who plays Classic WoW, you absolutely should tune into our podcast, because the first 20 minutes is pretty much just us talking very minutiae about about gearing, about, we're all three of us are warriors, so we have a lot to say, and it sort of just comes out before we get into like news and things like that. So anyone who plays will find a lot of good information about the mechanics and things like that, but then if you're a warrior, well, you'll get a little biased.
I was very impressed with the depth that you went into, because I was it's, you know, again, as somebody who played back then, like, those kind of resources didn't exist at the time. Like, the whole meta for WoW is so different than it was back then. And it's cool to see you guys approaching it, you know, the classic with the modern mindset as it is. Cause that's the mindset that we have. And it was very impressive what you guys were talking about. So definitely check out Warcraft Reloaded. And I am at WookieBH on Twitter. You can also find me here on the Mash Those Buttons Network on WoW Talk and on the Mash Those Buttons Show, which is currently on hiatus, but that should be back shortly. Join the Mash Those Buttons community on Discord at discord.me/mashthosebuttons and email us at torngoblin@mash.gg. Let us know what you thought of the Gates of Ankaraj event, or if you have any questions or thoughts on C'Thun. Which old god is your favorite? Let us know. You must have one that you like over the others, probably because he's whispering to you right now. And if you enjoyed this episode and would like to help us out, please share it and rate it if you can. And if you would like to support Mash Those Buttons, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons. You can help support Mash Those Buttons and all our great podcasts for as little as $1 a month and gain access to patron exclusive content. Also, for those in the chat room, please consider a Twitch subscription if you can. Thank you to Jasmine the Druid for the subscription earlier. And stay tuned to hear about our other shows on the Mash Those Buttons Network. Our next episode is scheduled to record live at twitch.tv/mashthosebuttons on, what is it, September 2nd. September 2nd at 10:30 p.m. Eastern, but check Twitter for any updates. The last few episodes, we did have to tweak the schedule a little bit, so pay attention to Twitter for that. For Katie and Ryan, I'm Nick. Ancestors, watch over you.
Time is classic, friends.
Delete the podcast. Redo.
's for listening to a Mash Those Buttons production. If you enjoyed the show, you should check out mashthosebuttons.com and see if any of our other shows might interest you. All of our shows are available on your podcast platform of choice like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. If you enjoy our content, you can help support Mash Those Buttons by becoming a patron at patreon.com/mashthosebuttons, where you can receive Patreon bonuses for as little as $1 a month. You can connect with Mash Those Buttons at twitter.com/themashnetwork, facebook.com/mashthosebuttons, or join our Discord at mash.gg/discord.